All right, here we are again, and glad you're along on this Monday, taking off. And we're going to do something this hour to show again that what else is really mass communication best for. It's to serve the information that the people need and deserve. And we've been following this vaping thing now. We're going to do another update with Dr. Henry Nyman because there's more information now. And I know that there are people listening who have vaped and maybe still do vape. There's certainly an understandable reflex among a lot of vapers that they don't want to hear about bad news, that it has to be something else because they don't want to give it up. I understand that. We just don't want anybody to suffer lung injuries if it's avoidable. And right now, we're still in a position of not knowing what is causing the damage to so many lungs. Some of these lungs are now showing what appear to be almost little pieces of opaque glass in them. It's getting to be very strange out there. Maybe there's something inherently wrong with inhaling hot vapors of any kind. I don't know. Some people are trying to pass it off on the street black market end of the suppliers. We don't know. But for right now, again, common sense dictates extreme caution. Henry, welcome back and thanks for being here.
Well, it's good to be back, Jeff. And there is a fair amount of activity, not so much on brand new cases, but what kind of warnings the CDC is putting out to the general public, as well as to physicians. And this is not that unexpected. If you recall, last Thursday, we had an update, in part because the CDC updates their vaping page every Thursday, and it gives new numbers. The two that most people are interested in is how many new cases were there and how many new deaths were there. And if you recall, last week the number of cases went up to 299, and the number of the deaths went up to 26. 1299. The 1299 was 219 higher than the prior week, and that was a little bit less than the 2 weeks before that. Each one had gone up 275 cases. But the deaths were steadily increasing. On last Thursday, they went up to 26, which was 8 higher than the previous week, and that week was 18, which was 6 higher than the week before that, and that week was 12, which was 5 higher than the week before. So each week it was a new record for the number of deaths that were reported, and just like the prior weeks, just as soon as that update was published, the numbers went up again. In this case, on Thursday, the 26 did not include the first case in Utah, which had been announced just prior to that. And then right after the page went up, Indiana announced 2 more deaths, so that brought them up to 3. And that was the first time any state had had more than one death in their update. So they had 2, they went up to 3, and actually they tied California for the most deaths in any state. They both had 3. And so it was clear that the situation wasn't improving. Warnings had been made that the number of new cases has been pretty steady. It wasn't increasing or decreasing dramatically, and as could be seen by these numbers, the deaths were going up. That last week was the first teenager that had died. If you recall, the median age of the deaths in the prior week was 49.5. Last week, the median dropped down to 49. But the deaths were clearly significantly older than the the vast majority of those that smoke, that about two-thirds of, developed the condition, about 67%, were between the ages of 18 and 35, and another 16-17% were under 18, and so only about 16 or 17% were above 35. And in the case of the deaths, the median age was actually 49. So I had said on Thursday night that they didn't hold a teleconference before they announced the updated numbers. And I said that they're probably going to hold a teleconference tomorrow on something else, which would have been Friday. And of course, Friday, they did hold a teleconference. They put out a notice late in the morning that there was going to be a teleconference at noon. Right. And then in the teleconference, they started to refer to an early release MMWR. And unfortunately, you couldn't really see the early release MMWR because it was embargoed until 1 o'clock, which was after the.
We better tell our listeners they don't all know what the MMWR is. You better define that real quick.
The MMWR is a weekly report. It's a morbidity and mortality weekly report, and it's a as the name implies, it's a report that comes out every week, and they do some things that cause deaths on an ongoing basis, and they kind of give updates for each of those. They give flu deaths in that update, and that's kind of in the appendix. And then they frequently have stories on diseases, outbreaks that are actually causing sickness or death, and that's why it's called the MMWR. It comes out every Friday, but it's actually available online the Thursday before. And then when there's something of great urgency, they actually put out an early release MMWR. So this early release MMWR that was embargoed until 1 o'clock Friday afternoon was actually a report that will be published next Friday, or this coming Friday now. But they put it out a week ahead of time because of the urgency of the situation, and they wanted to let all interested parties take a look at it and not have to wait another week before they got the results. So early release MMWR are of a more urgent situation, and the MMWR that they did release at 1 o'clock last Friday, and it will again appear this coming Friday, was interim guidance for healthcare providers evaluating and caring for patients with suspect, and then they kind of describe it, which is their new abbreviation and acronym is EVALI, which is e-cigarette or vaping product use associated lung injury. So EVALI is how they're abbreviating it now, and it's kind of a long descriptive
acronym.
The acronym is not that long, but the actual what the acronym stands for is kind of long, and it's basically to say the lung injury associated with vaping is essentially what all those words state.
The lung injury, we don't know if this is something that can be remediated by the body's immune system, restored. We don't know if it's permanent. We just don't know anything about it yet, except it's very odd.
Right. Well, they know a little bit about how patients have been treated. I mean, the purpose of this guidance is to talk to the various medical centers and doctors who have treated these patients. And then based upon their findings as to, you know, how the patients present and how they respond to various treatments and mm-hmm. what they have to do to get them out of the hospital, is all kind of put together. And then these this guidance is published, and it's for physicians to take a look and see, you know, what are they supposed to do with regard to this new phenomenon. And I mean, that's part of the reason it's called a mystery disease, because it's it is relatively new. The large number of cases really just started a few months ago, and that's one of the reasons the 1,299 cases is kind of a striking number, is that there, you know, are a significant number of patients identified over a relatively short time period, and they're going up between 200 and 300 cases every week. And the number of deaths each week is actually accelerating, that each week sets a new record for the number of deaths reported. The numbers are, you know, still single digits. That's what last week, you know, 8's the record, but it beat the record of 6 the week before, which beat the record of 5 the week before that. So, I mean, they are continually getting higher each week. And there have already been 3 deaths for this week, which wasn't in last week, which were, you know, in place last Friday. And they generally don't report anything over the weekend. And so there weren't any reported today. But most of the reporting actually does come on Tuesdays through Thursday. And I don't really expect the numbers of deaths to slow down either. It's a concern, and what was discussed in this interim report is, you know, what doctors should do about it. And one of the things they bring up is that this is getting to be fairly common. You know, that it's not like these are isolated incidents. Yeah. There have been cases that have been reported in every state except for Alaska. And the numbers are fairly significant, that three states that are kind of competing for number one are California, New York, and Illinois. They all have about 125 cases, and Texas and Wisconsin aren't very far behind. And actually, either is Indiana now that they've kind of moved up as the number one and the number of deaths. So there's, you know, they're reasonable sized states, but they are, you know, steadily increasing. They're all in the top three states are all, you know, above 120 cases now each. And they're actually doing updates pretty much, at least California and New York are updating on a daily basis. They're not doing it on a weekly basis. And they go up, you know, usually single digits, but it's like virtually every day. And so the doctors are given information on considering vaping to be a possible cause of symptoms that the patient comes to see them about, particularly if they're you know, flu-like symptoms, and they have a cough, or they have difficulty breathing, or they frequently have gastrointestinal symptoms, and they might very well have a temperature, and in a fairly short time develop pneumonia, which they can identify on X-ray. And the point is that, you know, these types of symptoms are called flu-like because they the flu causes the same symptoms as do other respiratory diseases, particularly over the winter during flu season. So, you know,
we're in for some confusion, sounds like.
Correct. And so the doctors are instructed that they should ask their patients, you know, about vaping. And And, you know, they say do it in a non-judgmental manner and do, you know, just matter-of-factly get that type of information from their patients if there's a possibility that the reason they've got these flu-like symptoms is because they've been vaping. And it's also possible that they not only have the flu-like symptoms because they've been vaping, but they may have because they've got the flu. They may very well have both as a result. And then they gave some examples of things that were kind of unexpected with some patients, a fairly small number so far, I think is five or less, that actually got discharged, and within a very short time period, they were readmitted. And so that's one of the concerns, that they may be releasing them too quickly. And then another concern was how sick they could get, how quickly they could get sick. The patients come in and they don't really seem to be too bad. Right. And they go and they admit them, and within a day or two, they just deteriorate very dramatically and they end up on ECMO machines. And so there's a deterioration.
Doesn't that seem a little unusual, Henry, that someone would deteriorate that quick? They get to a point and their lungs are damaged, but like the doctor said from, was it Johns Hopkins? Like chemical burns almost. They come in, they're sent home, they come back.
Actually it was a Mayo Clinic with the chemical burns. And
Mayo,
what they
sorry,
said
thanks.
There was another one with Johns Hopkins. I mean, there have been several studies that have come out fairly recently, and the Mayo Clinic came out and said that in contrast, which had been reported earlier, that it looked like lipoid pneumonia, where they had built up of lipids in their lung causing the pneumonia. But these were pathologists, and under the microscope where they actually were looking at the tissue, even though they could see some macrophages that were laden with lipids, lipid-laden macrophages was the terminology, they thought that that wasn't because they had lipids that had been inhaled and was causing all the problems. It was more because the cells were dying, and the membranes of the cells were responsible for the staining that was being seen by the lipids. So it was endogenous, not exogenous. And they said that it didn't really quite match what the lipoid pneumonia would look like. Rather, they look like what happened with chemical burns. And what was notable about that study is that they saw those chemical burns in all of them. They looked at 17 patients, samples from 17 patients, and they all looked like they had chemical burns. And 29% of those patients had denied THC usage. So they were patients who were basically vaping to for the nicotine, and in many cases, they would be patients that were former smokers, and they were trying to basically switch from cigarettes to vaping. So those chemical burns were one of the things that stood out. And another result of that MMWR is the CDC has announced that there'll be a Coca call, and it's not to drink your favorite soda. It's actually clinical outreach communication activity. And that is going to be this Thursday, and they are basically going to make a presentation that's really much more for physicians. So this is something for physicians can call in 2 o'clock on Thursday, and hear the presentation, and then
they're trying to educate the medical community because they're finding their way along.
Because this is kind of an emergency situation, and it's brand new, and they really don't know that much about it, and they can read the MMWR, but the Coca-Cola is even more medically oriented for physicians, and you know, all these very specific recommendations on how they should handle these patients and how they should treat the patients and how admitting the patients. And then there's an opportunity for the physicians to actually ask questions. And so there's the question and answer session that follows. And I actually sent you a link to it if your listeners want to take a look, because it'll basically say who it's for and how to actually call in if they want to listen into it. But in any event, that's another indication, really, of how serious this situation is. And the same thing came through on the teleconference that was for mostly for reporters. So right. They could ask questions to find out, you know, what were these readmissions and what was the latest information as to what is causing this, and are there going to be any solutions? And really, what the answer was that this may be multifaceted, that this may be several closely related diseases that are due to different combinations. And you know, as your listeners probably know by now, that you know, there's been a lot of discussion about high percentage of the patients using THC and potential contamination by various black market products, including vitamin E acetate.
Hold on, Henry. We've got to take a break. Hold that thought right there, if you would. We'll be right back with Dr. Nyman trying to keep up on this, and he's doing a marvelous job. This is unknown territory, so stay with us. I don't know what is going to come from this, but as Henry said, this may be a multifaceted issue. And then again, it might be very simple. It kind of runs the potential gamut of outcomes. I still think that with a wide array of what we describe, or what the doctors describe at the Mayo Clinic at least, as what appear to be chemical burns to the lungs, like World War I soldiers getting exposed to mustard gas, it suggests that there's some, and I think we've made the case here that both THC and nicotine users are suffering from the same symptomatic profile. So what is that telling us, Henry, about the actual process of vaping hot gases into the lungs? Anything?
Right.
Is it a simple solution, maybe?
Yeah, I think it is actually fairly simple. And I've mentioned this a few times now, and part of it kind of got an impetus from one of your listeners writing in and saying that some of the manufacturers in China were actually using lead solder instead of silver solder in the devices. And then I kind of looked at the Juul patent on their device, which they filed in 2016, issued in 2017, and they list their under the preferred embodiments, and that is basically what they say is what they consider the best version of their invention, but not necessarily the only version. They talked about temperature, and they talked about the boiling points of two of the more popular ingredients for vaping. One is propylene glycol, and the other one is vegetable glycerin. And the vegetable glycerin is a little bit more hydrophobic, or at least is possible to solubilize things like THC and CBDs, which are hydrophobic, and so they'll go into solution more easily. But these products, as well as other ones with these additives, like those that are cut with vitamin E, are still relatively hydrophobic, and as a result, their boiling point is higher, and so the heating is to a higher temperature. And the newer devices do allow for the heating to the higher temperature. And in general, those that are smoking THC would have more of an oil base, that their THC would be dripped into. And they would therefore have a tendency to vape at a higher temperature than the those that were vaping nicotine, which is more water soluble and is more likely to have more of the PG, the polypropylene glycol, and actually vaped at a somewhat lower temperature. And these higher temperatures could cause lots of issues with releasing particles, chemicals into the vape, including those that are in the device itself. And what your listener had mentioned was the lead solder instead of silver solder, and the lead solder has melting points significantly lower than the silver solder. And interestingly enough, I was looking at some of the tweets that were going up on vaping, and there are a lot of them, and there are some very strong positions on the tweeters. But one publication came out and cited a Colorado Green Lab that was talking about the device and solder being responsible for the symptoms that were being observed in the Mayo Clinic study. And it was a little bit different variation on the theme. They weren't talking about silver solder versus lead solder. They were just talking about silver solder, but they were saying that cheaper versions of the silver solder would have cadmium as a contaminant, whereas the more expensive silver solder would be cadmium-free. And they raised the issue that the solder with cadmium in it was actually being heated, and the cadmium was being released into the vape that was being inhaled by the users. And so they basically have a three-part story, and so far, they've only done part one, which has to do with the symptoms associated with cadmium poisoning. And the guy who wrote it had worked in an emergency room, and he had seen patients come in with these symptoms. And it turns out that they were patients that were welders, and they had got it from inhaling the vape, if you will, or the smoke, if you will, from welding. And it was called metal fume fever, and and some of the symptoms with cadmium pneumonitis pretty much matched the symptoms that were described in the Mayo Clinic report. So they did part one, talking more about the symptoms, and then part two is coming up this week, and they're going to do an analysis on what the actual devices look like, and they kind of released an initial version of pictures of various vaping devices and what the solder looks like on a cross section, and how close that solder is to the vape that's coming out of the cartridge, and how sometimes liquid comes out also, and liquid kind of fills the gap between the solder and the metal, and it causes it to ignite and releases kind of very toxic kind of smoke. And there have been some reports of exploding devices, and this would be one way they could explode. So this group is raising the possibility that there are heavy metals in the solder, and you know, there's also the potential for heavy metals being in the platings, and the release of those metals would be somewhat temperature dependent, and they may get more metal release in a in somebody that's vaping THC, which is in a more hydrophobic medium that has to be heated higher to reach its boiling point than some that are vaping nicotine. And right now, the part of the report noted that still 13% of the cases had denied THC usage. And just that number of 13% has set off some different interpretations of what that 13% represents. Those that have been vaping for a while say, well, that's just because 13% are just lying, and that it's really 100%, and they claim that there's never been a case of somebody smoking nicotine. Now the problem with that claim is reality. And there have been patients that did do exactly what the vaping is supposed to be for, and that is they switched over to vaping because they used to smoke cigarettes, and they were trying to get off the habit of smoking cigarettes, and thought they would switch to vaping. And those people would include people that have been smoking for a while and already had some type of symptoms from smoking, and that's why they switched. And they could account for some of the older patients, which is why the average age of the deaths is up at 49. Uh-huh. And one of the patients, there was a very extensive description of that patient and his background and his symptoms, and that was published in the New York Times today, and that has generated quite a bit of interest. And in part, it has the interest because it's the New York Times, and it's pretty clear that this was a former smoker. He was 68 years old. He was from Nebraska, and he died in May, and he was just recently classified as a vaping case, and he was really the first death, first and only actually so far, in Nebraska. And there was a fair amount of description when it first happened that was really done by the local paper in Nebraska, and the wife, his wife, saw the doctors who had told her that, her husband, actually, apparently, based upon the New York Times, she actually asked because she saw the news story that, the first vaping death in Nebraska, and it was in Douglas County, which is where she lived with her husband, and he was over 65, and her husband was 68. And she asked, was this vaping death her husband? And she was told yes. And then she said to the doctor, well, he was a heavy smoker, and he had symptoms, and he had COPD, and how do you know he didn't just die from being a lifelong smoker? And the response was, well, they did a CT scan. And when they did the CT scan, they saw ground glass opacity. And just to clarify, because I think there's some confusion, the ground glass opacity is not finding little particles that look like ground glass in his lungs. No. All that is the picture of the lungs. So when they take the picture of the lungs, it looks like certain areas of the lungs have a film over it. And the film, when you look at the view of what you can see beyond the film. So you can see part of the lung tissue underneath the film, but it looks like you're looking through ground glass. So it calls that effect in the film of the CT scan ground glass opacity, because it's like you're looking through ground glass and you can kind of see an image, but it's not really clear. It's just kind of blurred. And that's what they call that. And some lung cancers, they actually use that to identify early stages of lung cancer. And they look for changes in what regions show the ground glass opacity. And the fact that that is out there, that you can Google a ground glass opacity, and you can see lung cancer, that people say, this guy, he didn't really have any evidence of vaping. He had evidence that he had lung cancer. And what do you expect? He's 68 years old. He's smoking all his life, and he developed lung cancer. And now you're trying to say it's because of vaping. And the doctor said, no. He had ground glass opacity, but he had the pattern that didn't indicate that these were, tumors in the making. It was the pattern that they see with vaping. So the ground glass opacity shows evidence of lung damage, which is a common pattern being in vapors, including these, kids that are in high school and teenagers and early 20s. They have this ground glass opacity because that is what their lung damage looks like in a CT scan.
Right. I think you've got that straightened out. Good.
And this 68 year old who had stopped smoking 5 years ago and but had been vaping for the last 5 years, and he had been heavily vaping for 5 years, and then he went into the hospital with ARDS, or acute respiratory distress syndrome. And so he was having trouble breathing. He went in there, and they were unable to save him, and he died. And the original death certificate said he came in with ARDS, this acute respiratory disease. But then when they subsequently looked at the CT scan, not in May, but in September, they looked at the CT scan, and they said, this guy's got a 5-year history of vaping, and he's got these ground glass opacities that don't look like he's got a cancer. They look like he's been vaping, and he's got the damage that's associated with the vaping. So he was classified as a vaping case. And so
you know what we need to do? We're not going to get it done, probably, but it's too bad somebody can't just grab 50 vapers and give them a CAT scan or whatever it takes to get that kind of resolution.
And to see if this is
a baseline problem, we've got a big problem.
Right, right. And so they do have a history of patients that basically are already symptomatic. And they do have, it's not uncommon to see this ground glass opacity. And it is not, in those cases of people that have been vaping, and they have these symptoms, and these are kind of acute symptoms where they, have breathing difficulties and they've got pneumonia, that the ground glass opacity doesn't say, oh, they've all got lung cancer. It means that they've all got damage to their lung that looks a lot like the chemical burn damage that was described in the Mayo Clinic. And, that's in patients that have been, smoking vaping THC or vaping nicotine. They both sets have that. So, since I started talking about Twitter storms out there, there's, the same type of, argument that, well, there's never been a case. And this guy from Nebraska was certainly a case who, doesn't really fit the profile of somebody taking THC. He's trying to kick his smoking habit, and he was a heavy smoker before he developed these symptoms and died. And the first case in Georgia is the same thing. They didn't give his age other than he was over 35. And he was a heavy smoker, and he switched to vaping, and he developed symptoms, and he died. And so, even though this is a 13%, is still, there are a few anecdotal cases here where certainly sound like, I mean, they were former smokers, and there's nothing really to indicate they were taking THC. And then there's other examples of those that were in an Wisconsin, Illinois study that that did extensive interviews and conducted urine tests. And there weren't that many. There were only like four that had denied that they had taken THC. And two of the four did test negative on a urine test for THC. One tested positive, and he said, he maintained that he didn't vape THC, but he had smoked THC, and that would account for the THC in his urine. It would be there no matter how you ingested it. You could eat THC and still get it in your urine.
Right, then the other
one had in their urine, they said they hadn't vaped, but, why he had, one possibility, obviously, is they did lie, and others, they were kind of confused. And the others, they somehow got something that would show up in their urine. They might have, eaten THC in some food, or they might have, taken CBDs and had them cross-react with the THC test. So, I mean, there's a lot of ways that you could end up with THC, or at least a THC-positive result with your urine. And that didn't mean that you had vape THC. It could have, enter your system, or at least cross-reacting materials enter your system a lot of different ways. And they also mentioned in that same study that when they took vapers who said they vape THC, they got a very high reading. It was like 400 nanograms per ml or something. So it wasn't near the limits of detection, and these guys were just below, and the ones that vape THC were just above. The THC ones were screening positives, and these guys right. were negative. So there's some actual testing. And so when I go and I put out a tweet and say, well, here it is, read this report, it's public, and here's exactly what they said in the report. And, oh, it's the wrong test. You can't do a urine test. You got to do hair samples, and you got to do X, Y, and Z, and you know, all of a sudden the test changes. And then when you say these other ones that said they didn't have TAC, but they've got ground class opacities, that means they've got lung cancer or, you know, something else that doesn't have anything to do with vaping, even though, you know, that's one of the common, you know, patterns that you see with the vapors. So there is that fair amount of discussion going on as to what the data actually means. But there should be quite a bit more data, because, you know, as will be discussed in this upcoming COCA call, or what is discussed in the early release MMWR, which will be repeated again this Friday, that they're encouraging physicians to ask about vaping histories and to try to do it in a way that they're going to get some real answers. And they very well may end up with exactly what you said, which is patients that come in to see the doctor because, you know, maybe they've got a cough and they don't have pneumonia yet, and they haven't gotten that sick. And they decide that, well, they're not going to do an X-ray. They're going to do a CAT scan. And they may be patients that they discharge and they come back 6 months later and they've got a CAT scan in their chart that I kind of look at it a little closer and say, you know, there's this ground class opacities when he was asymptomatic. Yeah. And look at, they're kind of in the same place, but they're significantly larger 6 months later. And now they have the symptoms, and they may very well be able to, you know, develop a diagnostic test, and they'll have better numbers as to when this ground class opacity appears. And whether it only appears when they're symptomatic or whether it's a good predictor that
I would
have problems.
My we got to go, but my sense is that this is there's some baseline issue involved, that probably all vapors, a large percentage of across the board vapors may present with the same symptomology if they were CAT scanned. I wouldn't be surprised. But we'll have to see. We'll have to wait and see. Thank you, Henry, as always. Excellent
work. It's only the beginning here. We're going to get some more data, and it's not going to be too long. So we'll see what happens, and I'll keep you posted.
Thank you very much. Okay. Good night.
Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Dr. Henry Nyman, there's the latest for you again. I just wish I had some harder data. We'll get it. We'll get it. So just stay with us. All right, back with more in just a few minutes. Hold on.